All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado Tony Pennycambo.
And Psychic Tom Pettit. Tarot cards all laid out. Stars, make the predictions.
Well, of course, we have the big, big game this weekend. And Tony sent me an article about the Rocky statue and the two Rocky statues, the Balboa and the Marciano statue bet. And it got me thinking, we should do a little friendly bet of our own.
Okay.
In a Philly and a New England guy. And I was thinking, whoever wins, if the Eagles win, then I have to buy you an Eagles jersey of your choice, have it sent to me, wear it in either a video or a picture, and post it on Facebook. Then you have to do the same thing with the Patriots
one. Well, I think in order to keep this a little bit more cost effective, because I got some expenses I'm working on right now, and I'll get into that in a little bit, I got a better idea. Because, you know, why spend a lot of money when we have a better idea? Here's my idea. Put up any type of food that you want, okay? I will wager you some Philadelphia tasty cakes, soft pretzels, and tasty pies.
Okay. I don't know. I'll have to think of something on my end. You know, the usual New England thing is lobsters, but
we'll put some lobsters.
We'll see. We'll do lobsters if the Patriots get slaughtered. But you have to help me with my lineup so I can win the FanDuel. Who's gonna explode for the Philadelphia guys? We know Nick Foles is gonna have to have a good game.
I'm hoping that because I think they're gonna try to match up on the outside, so I think they're gonna put Gilmore on Jeffrey, and so I think you're really gonna want to look at if the Eagles are to win this game, they're gonna need big games out of their tight end Zach Ertz and their slot receiver, Nelson Aguilar. If those two guys can have big games, then the Eagles really got a shot.
Well, Gronkowski is very expensive in FanDuel, so...
Well, yeah, I can believe that.
And I don't know how good he's going to do, but I had to have him on at least one team. But, Ertz is not that far either.
But he's back from the concussion. If he takes a hit, that could knock him back out. But when you get a player of that caliber, that's a risk sometimes you got to take.
All right, Tom, who's winning? What's the score? Give us the psychic intuition.
My crystal ball tonight has been restricted to the fight.
Oh, shit.
I blocked the NFL out, but I have an excuse. That's what my excuse is before I live. The NFL does not exist. Okay, so my crystal ball is a little foggy on this issue. You guys know how good it is on the fights, but this one, it's a little foggy.
All right,
the best team. Well, what a weasel answer, huh?
You know, the big Super Bowl game is always compared to a heavyweight fight, so let's transition right into this one, Tom. What do you think about Stipe, your boy, against the heavyweight Daniel Cormier? The light heavyweight. Moving up to heavyweight.
I don't think Stipe will sleep on this fight because you can't sleep on Daniel Cormier. He's proven his worth at heavyweight. And he is a legitimate challenger. But I just think for Stipe, it's kind of a no-win scenario because if he wins, he's beating up on a much smaller fighter. And then if he loses, it's like, well, he never should have been the champ in the first place, and he came along at the right time. So it's just, I'm not happy about it. Now, from a fight standpoint, I think it does have the possibility to go the distance. Cormier's chin's been very good in the past. But I think Stipe will come away with it. My feeling now, though, it could go into the later rounds.
Yeah. Now that we've seen Stipe go all five rounds against a guy like Ngannou, you'd think he can last with Daniel, but it's going to be, I think, a war when it does go down. A lot of wrestling.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough fight for Daniel. Cormier probably would want to take it to the ground if he can. Stipe's takedown defense is superb. And on the feet, it's just a tough reach disadvantage Cormier will be at. I don't think it would be this big of a factor if Stipe were not so technical. But I'm sure you guys have watched some of the breakdowns from the last fight, and his technique was just not flawless, but awful good. So I think Daniel's just think he'll come up short one way or the other. But again, I don't think Stipe is the kind of fighter that looks beyond anyone. I think he'll be focused in, and it's kind of a shame. They did a special where Cormier came to the area, and he rode around with Stipe, went over to the fire department, went to the gym, and it seemed like they had such a cordial relationship, and I guess that's going to have to be put on hold for now. That's the business, huh?
And what would a week in combat sports be without Floyd Mayweather jumping in a cage?
Yeah,
Just as a tease, maybe.
Insert joke here, right? Floyd Mayweather doing a workout inside the cage and sparking all kinds of talk, but I'm still spreading the rumor. CM Punk versus Floyd Mayweather for the loser weight championship.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think that's completely in science fiction. I mean, hey, when the whole Mayweather-McGregor fight was being talked about, what's the first thing all three of us thought? No way that's going to happen. No way.
Nope. No freaking way.
Yeah. And wrong. So, anything's possible. But
Here's a crazy story about boxing. Shifting gears here. We got the Olympics coming up, of course, but not the boxing Olympics. Still, one of Uzbekistan's leading criminals was named interim president of the boxing's governing body, the Olympic version, International Boxing Federation. AIBA. Their vice president, Gafu Rakhimov, was promoted last Saturday after the unexpected resignation of interim leader Franco Fulcinelli. And this is crazy. This is true, though. This is a quote. Rakhimov has been described as having moved from extortion and car theft to becoming one of Uzbekistan's leading criminals and an important person involved in the heroin trade. According to the U.S. Treasury Department last month when it announced freezing any assets he held under American jurisdiction. This is the guy in charge of amateur boxing.
You know, that is quite a title when they say Rebecca, one of Uzbekistan's top criminals. Near the top there. Wow.
And he's part of a group called the Thieves in Law. It's a vast criminal organization which has spread throughout the former Soviet Union, Europe, and the United States, engaging in a variety of crimes such as money laundering, extortion, bribery, and robbery. Perfect match for the sport of boxing, right? And Rakhimov allegedly has supported this criminal group by providing a warning of law enforcement issues, arranging meetings, and addressing other problems. And a federal document said Rakhimov is a resident in Dubai, where AIBA members met on Saturday before last. So, yeah, so it's a controversial situation. They had just actually made the ruling last year, we talked about it, to go without headgear and then let guys do pros. So they just been making all kinds of crazy decisions. And they had a guy resign last year, CK Wu, Taiwanese member of the IOC, who left office last year. So ridiculous. This is the next guy in line. Great. Good luck. Good luck to the amateur boxing. Anyway. In pro boxing, we had some fights over the weekend. Lucas Matisse beat Tewa Karam. We're pretty much outclassed him in that one.
There's an active fight out there. Here's the problem with the guy like Matisse. He's more of a plodding fighter. He's, you know, kind of slow-footed, punches like the Dickens, but he can be outworked. And, you know, a guy that doesn't want to engage him can turn it into a pretty dull fight by staying away. And, you know, keep Matisse, you know, at bay. And, you know, he was able to escape this one, you know, by cold cocking him. You know, when you're trying to get back in there, you know, with Danny Garcia, who holds a win over Matisse 4 years ago, or you're trying to get in there, you know, with the Terrence Crawfords, the Keith Thurmans, and, the, you know, all the guys of that caliber, Errol Spence, you got to really go out there and look impressive. I mean, he's got the punching power that, you know, can make any fight interesting. But, you know, against those top-tier guys, I just don't think he has the overall, you know, natural speed and ability to contend with them.
Right. Well, that was kind of a tune-up fight for him anyway. We'll see if he's, you know, trying to jump right back into a title picture. But we also had Jorge Linares beating Mercito Gesta. Ezequiel Osvaldo Moderna beating Martin Fidel Rios all last Saturday. Emmanuel Togo beat Fernando David Saucedo. Jerry Tomogden lost to Pedro Tadoran. Probably not getting that one right. Eve Ngabu beat Jeffrey Botello. I don't have the actual results. But big one was the boxing super series going on right now. Maris Bredis beat, lost to Alexander Usyk. So Usyk moves on to the, I believe, semifinals they're in now. We also had Yoan Congolo beating Andres Pocomenko. But the Super Series is turning out to be a pretty big deal. I'm not sure of all the names, but, I mean, it's something I put on the blog all the time. It's one of those things that they send me all the PR for. So I've been kind of keeping an eye on it out of the corner of my eye. And the good thing about it is they're letting the belts pass on through the tournament. You know, they're not just saying, oh, this is a tournament, so we're holding on to our belts. So whoever ends the tournament has all the belts, whoever wins. So I think it's pretty interesting. They've done it once before, but not on this scale, I don't think. And there's some pretty good names and good fighters involved. And as part of that series, they have a big fight with George Groves coming up next week, I believe. George 17th against Chris Eubank Jr. That should be a really good one. It's the same week as Garcia versus Rios. Speaking of Danny Garcia. this weekend we have part of it, Murat Gassiev versus Junior Dorticos on Saturday. I believe I saw Dorticos in Vegas one time, if I remember correctly. I was out there. Alright. Oh, Jesus Fight of the Week right off the bat. Do you know what the Jesus Fight of the Week is this week? It's in Argentina. Omar Andres Narvaez. He is 47-2-2, fighting a Jesus who might need a miracle, because his record is 16-11. One draw, fighting a guy with only two losses, two draws, 47 wins. Main event. Jesus.
Well, at least he's over 500.
Yeah.
There you go.
Jesus is the very first fight on the list for this Saturday. Isn't that funny? Jesus. It has to be the Jesus Fight of the Week. Let's see what else we're going on. Adler, Russia. This is the big Super Series one. It's happening in Russia here. At the Bolshoi Ice Dome, Murat Gassiev, he's coming in at 25-0 versus Junior Dorticos, 22-0. So somebody's always going to go. And it's IBF World Cruiserweight title on the line and WBA Super World Cruiserweight title. I was going to say, is there a super cruiserweight division? No. it's for the super world. That includes the moon. No. Jupiter. The super world cruiserweight title. Coming to you from Russia. Should be a good one. And co-main event there, Roman Andreev, 20-0, fighting Craig Evans, who's 17-1-2 for the vacant WBO International Lightweight title. Vacant WBC Silver Cruiserweight title on the line between Maxim Vlasov, 41-2, and Olan Riwaju Duradola, who is 27-4. Tough names on this one in Russia. Vaj Sarakanyan, 17-1-1, fighting Hurricane Futa, 23-7-1, close cousin of the Tornado Hurricane. For the WBC International Lightweight title. That's not his nickname. That's his real name, Hurricane. Hurricane Futa. I've never seen that guy's name before. He's 23-7 with one draw. That's the one they call the Hurricane. And then we got Fedor in action. Fedor Chudinov. 16-2, fighting Timo Lane, who is 21-9. Whole crap load of fights going on. There's one in Corpus Christi, Texas. Somebody's always got to go on ESPN on Saturday at the Bank of America Center. WBO World Super Middleweight title on the line. Gilberto Ramirez, undefeated at 36-0, fighting Habib Ahmed, who is 25-0-1. So, big, big fight there. Co-main event.
We have checked two boxes so far. The Jesus fight and the Oh Gotta Go.
Oh Gotta Go,
now
yeah.
We got some lopsided
stuff. We got a lot of O's. Gotta go.
Record.
Somebody's O's gotta go's. We have Jerwin Ansajas in the co-main event. He's 28-1-1, fighting Israel Gonzalez, who's 21-1 for the IBF World Super Flyweight title. It's a very impressive card so far for ESPN. I'm very suspect. Where did Bob Arum find this group of guys? This is the top rank show. Then we got Jesse Hart, 22-1, fighting Thomas Awambono, 25-7-1.
Also, so I think this is Jesse's first fight after his title fight loss a few months ago.
And it just keeps on going. Good fights. Rohan Murdoch, 21-1, fighting Frankie Filippone, who is 24-6-1. Now we got Jose Benavidez, undefeated at 25-0, fighting Matthew Strode, who's 24-5. And those are all the good fights on that one. Yep, that rounds out Saturday. And big one on Sunday is Dago Higa versus Moises Fuentes. And then, of course, we got to talk about results. We had Bellator and UFC fight cards last week. And we have just the UFC fight card this week. And I should say in Brazil, Saturday. So I'm sure there's going to be a little time difference, sort of. But anyway, we'll get to the preview in a minute, but... Results-wise, the big UFC fight was main event Ronaldo Souza taking apart Derek Brunson with a big old head kick and some punches just 3 minutes and 50 seconds into that main event in Charlotte, North Carolina on Fox, UFC on Fox 27. And actually almost missed this one. I almost missed this whole card because I was just flipping through the channels, and I was, oh, geez, I forgot UFC was on tonight. So lucky it was free TV.
it was rabbit ears. Jacare just looked perfect. What a setback for Brunson. That's losing twice to him.
Yeah, he just didn't have
that. The whole town.
He didn't have that spunk. He didn't really be, he didn't seem to be on his toes or really in the fight the whole time, and then Souza just put the stuff together to kind of shock a lot of people, because you know most people would expect him to take an arm or you know try to do some jiu-jitsu on Brunson and wrestle him to the ground, and he overwhelmed him with strikes.
Yeah, he's improving. His stand-up game is for real. He proved it.
And then we had a guy with one of my favorite nicknames, Andre Touchy Feely, getting a win over Dennis Bermudez by split decision. It was pretty decent. It was a complicated fight. You know, they both had clashing styles. And
it was, it was close. We'll put it that way. It was a very close decision.
Wouldn't want to be a judge on that one.
Yeah.
Easy one to score before that. Gregor Gillespie got the TKO over Jordan Rinaldi with 14 seconds left in the first round. TKO.
That was a performance. And, you know, a lot of the comments were they could have given the hometown guy somewhat a little bit easier. Because he was, I think he was a 6-1 dog in that fight, the hometown guy. Yes. I didn't know the odds were that high.
And we had Drew Dober took the Macho out of Frank Camacho by unanimous decision. The ninth fight of the night. Bobby Green back on the winning track against Eric Koch. Also unanimous decision win for him. Mersad Bektik had a big win over Godofredo Castro from a punch to the body. How about that? One first round, 2 minutes and 47 seconds in. Hit him in the ribs, I guess. Caitlin Chukagian beat Mauro Romero Morella by unanimous decision on the undercard. Also, Randall Marcos notched another win, a big win over Juliana Lima by unanimous decision. And the other female fight, Yeon Kim beat Justine Kish by split decision. And then one I just watched last night on the replay, Vince Pichel beat Joaquin Silva by unanimous decision. And rough full fight for him. Second fight of the night, Nico Price beat George Sullivan by rear naked choke. And first fight opener, Corey Sandhagen will hopefully get his own sure dog picture now that he beat Austin Arnett by TKO. Second round, 3 minutes and 48 seconds in. And of course we had a masterful performance, kind of remind me a little of Floyd Mayweather in the boxing ring. Lorenz Larkin in the main event against Fernando Gonzalez. It was just outstanding. He got the unanimous decision. He danced a lot. He used a lot of good footwork, a lot of good punches, and Fernando just couldn't get over his lack of reach. Lorenz just put on a striking clinic. And it's, you know, it's pretty much never went to the ground. Kept it where he wanted it and made it look good for the cameras. And sometimes that's just lack of a deep talent pool for Bellator at some of the weights. But, you know, Lorenz Larkin is just in a perfect position there to show everybody that he's massively improved. You don't expect a guy with 7 losses to go in there and dominate like that, but he's a sleeper, so we'll see. He definitely handled the guy that gave Michael Venom Page a run for his money. So, we'll see what happens. But Fernando, 27-15, Lorenz, 19-7. Also on the undercard, co-main event, Syed Awad got another win over J.J. Ambrose by unanimous decision. A.J. Matthews, training partner and friend of Kendall Grove, had to beat him up. Beat Kendall up. Poor guy. Split decision loss for Kendall. Former UFC guy. And it's just kind of a crazy situation, you know. Supposedly, Daniel Cormier got permission from Cain Velasquez to go fight Stipe, you know, and because they're training partners, but these guys actually fought each other.
Well, the conspiracy nuts around on this one. Well, you know what's going to happen. Cormier's going to get hurt. Cain's going to step up at the last minute, you know, that kind of stuff. So they're having a lot of, just, they're going crazy.
Nuts. All right, so Jake Smith also beat Steve Cazzola first round. Punches 57 seconds in. Knockout. That was a big knockout. Also, same result. 2 minutes more. Took him. Mark Vorgeas beat Tim Riskin. Knockout punches first round. And then there was a TKO in the fight before that. Everett Cummings winning over Ben Beebe. 2 minutes and 12 seconds into the first. Then we had a couple of unanimous decisions. Micah Ndaya over Julio Aguilera. Justin Lawrence over Andrew Natividad. And Joshua Jones beat DeMarcus Brown by neck crank submission. 3 minutes and 2 seconds into the first. Moses Murrieta beat Chris Herrera by TKO in the first round. 2 minutes and 40 seconds into that one. Tyrell Fortune in the second fight of the night beat Joe Hernandez by unanimous decision. And Tyree Fortune, I'm assuming, is a relative. Tyrell and Tyree fighting back to back. Both got wins. Tyree beat Michael Quintero by unanimous decision. And like I said, we got a big fight coming up in Brazil Saturday night. Prior to the big game on Sunday, we got undefeated Eric Anders in the main event against Lyoto Machida. 22-8, hasn't fought in a long time. And co-main event, John Dodson back in action against Pedro Munhoz. But I don't know a lot about Eric Anders. Tom, have you seen this guy fight?
No, but he's getting his opportunity here against the old vet, so it should be. I haven't seen the odds yet, but I think Anders is probably going to be the odds on favorite. But it is in Brazil, so maybe Machida can come up with something.
Are you saying there might be something in this Eric Anders' water? You might not want to drink.
Well,
he's only had two UFC fights. That's probably why I don't remember seeing him. He beat Rafael Natal back on July 22nd last year at UFC on Fox 25 by knockout. Then he got a unanimous decision win over Marcus Perez December 9th at UFC Fight Night 123. Before that, he was in LFA, then Bellator. Before that, he had one fight, TKO win. Hasn't fought any huge names, so this is going to be the biggest name that he fights. I'd say Lizzie Liotto has it under control, and they've handpicked this guy to take his first loss to him, but then again, you can't argue with undefeated sometimes, so this might be a barn burner.
It just seems like Machida's been around forever. I remember him going back to the early 2000s, so... At some point, you gotta wonder how much tread's left on those tires.
Yeah, you gotta think if he has a embarrassing loss here, he might decide to retire right there in the cage. Hopefully,
yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what he's got left in the tank, especially in his home country. There. Then we've got John Dodson fighting Pedro Munhoz. I think John Dodson is one of the fastest punchers in the UFC period, and I like his chances there against a guy with a lot less losses, but a little bit less wins too. And it's a tough environment for him to fight in, but he don't care. He's gonna be jumping all over the cage. Then we got a female fight, pretty big. Female fight high up on the card. Valentina Shevchenko, 14-3, fighting Priscilla Cachoeira. Shevchenko, 14-3. Cachoeira is 8-0. And there's a big one. Desmond Green, 20 wins, 6 losses, fighting Michael Rosales, who's 23-2. We got Marcelo Gome, 6-0, fighting Timothy Johnson, 11-4. Thiago Santos, 16-5, fighting Anthony Smith, 28-12. And it goes on and on here. Tim Means, 27-9-1, fighting Sergio Moraes, 12-3-1. It could be a big sleeper war fight of the night. Alan Patrick Silva Alves, 14-1, fighting Demir Hadzibic, who is 11-3. Douglas Silva de Andrada, who is 24-2, fighting Marlon Vera, who's 10-4-1. Joe Soto, 18-6, fighting Yuri Alcantara, who is 34-9. And we got undefeated Davison Figueiredo, who is 13-0, fighting undefeated Joseph Morales, 9-0. So somebody's always got to go there. And first fight of the night, Maya Kahuanale Stevenson, fighting Pollyanna Viana Mota. Stevenson 6-4, Pollyanna 9-1. That does it. That was some tough names there. Didn't know if I was going to get through that. Anyway. So, I think that about does it for our upcoming schedules. You guys got anything else you want to add?
Well, I did, and of course now I'm drawing a blank. That's the story of my life, you know, anymore. My terrible, terrible brain. So, Tom, if you want to, put anything out there and then give me a chance to recall what I was going to do. I don't know, man. You're a hard guy to get a read on sometimes. If you are, let's just say, a most, not a lot of word this right, most eccentric fellow. Okay? And I say that in a good way. You're a most eccentric guy.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
Well, did you hear what I did the other week and I thought I was going to get in trouble?
No, never doubt.
I was going to work, and I know you guys know that I don't work at the office of my company. I was actually at my Center City office yesterday, but most of the time I am at the satellite office for our largest client. And they kind of find me amusing, and, you know. So I'm driving in, and I'm about to turn into the office. It was the weekend of the championship games. And there was a guy standing outside my company on the street in the dog mask that has become popular in Philadelphia for the underdogs. Eagles jersey with a big sign that honkers, you love the Eagles. So I honk my horn and I pull into the parking lot. I go park my car and say, I gotta get a picture of this guy. So I walk up and I snap a photo, and then my little white thing's on in my head saying, shit, if word gets back to my company that somebody's outside goofing off in a dog mask, they're gonna think it's me. Shit, I'm gonna get in trouble for something I didn't even do. So I snapped a selfie with the guy, and I texted it to my boss, yo, in case reports get sent to you that there's somebody goofing off in a dog mask, it's not me. So we had a pep rally later that afternoon, and the guy, the one head honcho there was, you know, saying like, well, first of all, I was walking back after getting the photo, and people I didn't even know were seeing me, and they're like, oh, I was gonna bet money it was you. I'm like, I don't even know you. I must really have a reputation at a place I don't even work. And so we're having this, you know, little pep rally thing, and they're sitting there going, oh, yeah, there are people that we thought it could be. Call me up. I'm like, great. So they had us sing the fight song a few times, and it actually was one of the brothers from the actual company that I work at. Just humorous.
What are you dressing up as this weekend?
What
are you dressing up as this weekend?
Nothing.
You aren't going to be Apollo Creed with an eagle head on?
No. As, you know, it's funny, and maybe, and it's not just my boxing background, because they say, you know, a lot of athletes, especially certain sports, are superstitious. Hockey players traditionally are lunatics. Baseball players, very superstitious. Me as a boxer, I actually had coaches that would want to almost throw me out of the gym because of my rituals and my superstitions. And, I mean, like, well, I forget, was it one day someone's like, oh, are you afraid to walk under a ladder? I'm like, hell no. I'll walk under a ladder, kiss a black cat, you know. Well, on Friday the 13th, no problem. Smash a couple mirrors, no problem. Don't ask me to wrap my right hand first. And don't ask to put my right glove on first, or I will flip out. So, what am I doing? I am sitting in the exact same spot as I did the last two games, wearing the exact same clothes and eating the exact same things.
Awesome.
Does it really, honestly have, make a difference? No. But in my mind, it does.
Yeah, I'm going to be wearing my 2016 AFC Champions Patriot hat that has a nick in it, and it's not one of them store nicks that you get that looks like a nick. It's from a chainsaw, and I did it while I was not wearing it, for those people who think I'm out of control. I just kind of bumped into it, and it looks cool.
Have either of you guys ever seen the sitcom called The Goldbergs?
I have witnessed missed minutes of it. Here and there.
It's a pretty good show, and it's actually based off, I guess, one of the writers, like, I guess, memories growing up. But it's set in Jenkintown, Pennsylvania. Do you guys know where that is?
Is it close to where you live?
Jenkintown is about maybe 2 miles from where I grew up. And my uncle was a police officer there, so my cousin, they love the show because it always shows all these Jenkintown places that they know or and they remember from their father being a police officer there. And like the one, you know, like running punchline of the show is it's supposed to be set in the 80s. So this is when they had the old Bet Stadium for the Phillies and the Eagles, and the very famous 700 level of rowdy people and throwing snowballs to Santa Claus and all that good stuff. And so the one kid gets lost in the stadium and he doesn't know where to go, and he's like, well, maybe I'll go higher. 700 level, that means it's a higher class of people, which anybody that knows the old Bet Stadium stories is where all the drunks and belligerents hung out. But talking about good luck rituals, that was the one episode they're getting ready to watch an Eagles game, and they're having to, and the father and son have to do everything exactly the same. And I'll have to send you the clip. It was on YouTube. I was watching it. It's like, you see it, and it's like how funny it is. They make a joke out of it, but then also at the same time, like, how true it really is.
Right. Wow. I'm sure it's going to be a stressful game knowing the Patriots, how they've been going down to the wire lately.
Do you think I feel? You got five of them. I ain't got none.
They do have a little bit more experience at this level than the Eagles. But
I'm just hoping
it hasn't stopped them before from making it a last possession at a game.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing going back to the championship games, and I likened it to boxing. I don't know if I discussed this last week with you guys. But, you know, for a guy that, you know, I've been watching a lot of fights, I will compare boxing to any sport out there. You know, when I train people, I use a lot of references to baseball. Oh, before I forget, Jenkintown, PA is also where Reggie Jackson grew up, Mr. October. But, you know, I will reference anything with boxing. And years ago, when I used to work with my one boss, I went to an Eagles game on a Sunday, and it was actually the Sunday that the U.S. Started the retaliatory bombing in Afghanistan after 9/11. They announced it right before the game. They actually had George Bush on the big screen stating that he was taking action. But the game, the Eagles were playing, and they were up by 6, and they were playing very soft defense at the end, a prevent type of defense, and the other team ended up driving down the field and scoring with like 15 seconds to go, and Eagles lose by 1 point. And I remember, like, I was in the work the next day and I'm bitching and moaning, and my boss was like, you know why they lost? And I said, you know, when I was blaming it on them kicking a field goal when they could have went for it and really putting the game out of reach, he goes, they lost because they were, you know, playing unaggressively. They played the prevent defense, and that only prevents you from winning. Uh-huh. And that's, in my mind, it's like you're playing not to lose. You're afraid. You don't want to make a mistake. You want to give them the little things because you're afraid that they'll get you with one shot. So that's like you're giving up 5 or 6 soft punches because you're afraid to throw your own, because you're afraid to give up the big punch. And 2 weeks ago, you know, Jacksonville's playing New England at the end of the first half. Jacksonville has the ball. They convert a third down. It gets called back on penalty. They get sacked. So now New England has one timeout. They punt the ball with 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go. They fair catch it at 2:02. I'm like, you just gave Brady an extra timeout. Like, that's idiotic. You know, take it to the 2 morning and punt it and leave them with
one. Well, yeah, I mean, the last Super Bowl. Talk about big mistakes. that big sack
Atlanta
that
went into a prevent defense. They didn't keep them pedal on the metal. They got
if they hadn't made the mistakes that they made, that comeback would have been impossible. And that's kind of what the Patriots do. I mean, we've called it for years and years the bend but don't break defense. And
right.
Sometimes they live up to it a little too much.
If you go back and you look at 2 weeks ago, Jacksonville gets scored on a minute before the half. They got about 55 seconds and a couple timeouts. They kneel on the ball on their 25-yard line. 40 yards and you can kick a field goal. But they played afraid. In the second half, they were trying to milk their lead, and they played soft, and they let Brady basically take over. Then you go to the Eagles, and the Eagles, were playing, a top defense, and they were underdogs, so they really had nothing to lose. And, at the half, with 40 seconds to go, not even, at 25 seconds to go, they get the ball on their own 30-yard line, they ended up driving and get a field goal. They played to win.
Yep.
It reminds me, you had a lot of, good fighters, back, during any time frame, but, they always had a heavyweight division in the mid-80s, was kind of weak, after Larry Holmes got dethroned and he was getting older and Michael Spinks wasn't fighting a lot, he was injury-ridden, so you had, like, the Tony Tubbs, the Picklin Thomases, the Tony Tuckers, Trevor Burbicks, all those guys out there. So now Mike Tyson comes along and he's thrashing everybody, and guys are terrified. Good fighters were terrified. Guys like Bone Crusher Smith fought not to lose. He didn't fight to win, fought not to lose, and he survived the distance. Here's another one, a great fighter like Larry Holmes, who ended up fighting for another decade plus.
I always remember him rolling on his back after Mike Tyson knocked him out.
Yeah, Larry Holmes fought not to lose. He fought the way he would never fight. And what happened? He never got Tyson's respect in that fight, and then Tyson ended up knocking him out cold. They fought not to lose. They fought the prevent defense, which only prevented them from winning. Buster Douglas came out there and said, I'm an underdog. I got nothing to lose. I'm coming out here to win.
Yep. Well, Nick Foles is going to have to take a page out of Buster Douglas's book on Sunday to beat up Tom Brady. Now, there's a little bit of controversy going into this one. I don't know if you guys heard this story, but I actually saw it on a couple of the little gossip shows last week. Apparently, there's a radio host in Boston that's in a little hot water who was suspended because there's a Facebook reality show that Tom Brady's done. And, it's social media is exploding to these days, so now he's... People are putting out their own independent stuff, and Brady put out a little thing about his life, and one of his kids is in there, his 5-year-old daughter, and so this radio host called her an annoying little piss ant. So the next time Brady got on a call with these guys, he's supposed to do an interview, he says, I'm just going to decline to do this interview today, and I'm going to reevaluate whether I'm going to work with this station anymore. So he's taking it seriously, and it is certain things are off limits. You just don't talk about that. So
all right, now here's the question: why was that guy just suspended? Why wasn't he fired?
Actually, Brady said he was glad he wasn't fired. He didn't want to affect his career or anything. He just thought that was crossing the line. So. Maybe the suspension will smooth things over. But at the time, he was just really pissed.
I don't know. I've never heard of that guy before. But from looking at him, he seems like the kind of demon that would just hate successful people. that Brady is everything he's not and can't be and never will be. And instead of looking at successful people and saying, all right, maybe I can't be as good as they are, but I want to model them. I want to see what they're doing that can make my life better. Instead of doing that, I don't get that vibe from that guy at all. He's a little demon. Little nasty demon. My two cents for it.
Yeah, I don't know the guy's name offhand, but it's not like he's not like a legend of the sports world or anything. Not a big contributor to the show that he made their mark on.
You know, and most fans were saying, even if they don't like Brady, which I don't understand that either. I mean, whether you're cheering for him or not, I mean, the man's phenomenal. But even most sports fans were saying, hey, I don't care for Brady, but family is off limits. Period.
Yeah, what?
5-year-old? You does that make you a better person to trash a 5-year-old?
The hell? Man, I one of the things I got to mention, I think this is the funniest storyline of all with the Patriots, is that it's rigged anyway, so you don't have to worry about it. You know, just the Patriots are going to win. It's all rigged. Last week, the last game, the proof from the conspiracy theorists. I mean, there are so many Facebook and YouTube videos on this. It's unbelievable. Apparently, a referee thought he was going over to break up a fight or something, or a scuffle, and he realized there's two Patriots guys celebrating the touchdown. And so he was laughing. And they said, oh, the referees are celebrating the Patriots touchdown. So that was going viral everywhere. I thought that was kind of funny.
That's not all that.
There are a lot of people out there who are convinced, though, that the NFL wants the Patriots to win.
Someone asked me today, they said, you know, if the referees, you know, favor the Eagles because of, like, the whole underdog feel-good story, would you feel any less with that? Like, if they won? I said, nope.
Win is a win. I'll tell you, though, Nick Foles will be a lot of pressure on him next year. I mean, we're going to have a quarterback battle in Philly. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, but he said that he's the backup, and, you know, it's Wentz's team. He's just doing what he's got to do.
We'll see. It reminds me a lot of Brady and Bledsoe. We'll see what happens. Bledsoe happened earlier in the year, so gave Brady a little bit more time to season himself. But then again, Nick Foles has not needed seasoning, so I think it's going to be a great game. And it's going to be a lot of passing. It might be over 700 yards passing in this game.
Well, you never know.
Total from both guys.
Yeah.
Anyway. Gonna call it quits here until next week. My prediction is Patriots 38, Eagles 28.
Well, it's not gonna be that high scoring, and I'm gonna go along the line with Eagles 31. Patriots 24.
All right. Well, I don't care who wins. If I win my FanDuel league, that's all I really care about.
If you can have the FanDuel league, and I'll take the Super Bowl win.
Yeah. All
right. If you had enough.
Now it would be. You know, it's one of those things. Though I hate to be like the Patriots guy who already has it all and wants more, but. It would be nice, but at the same time, like, the Eagles really need it for their fan base. You guys, it would be great if you had it. Tom Brady doesn't need another trophy in his case, but, you know, it would be nice as a fan. You can't root against your own team, you know, against their success, but, you know, it would be nice once to just have them win outright and people not say, oh, you know, they cheated, this, that, the other thing, make all these excuses for why they won. But anyway, they had a tough year. They started 2-2. And to think they would get back there again this year, back then it was like, no way.
I just want one before the duck. Not asking for a whole lot here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be devastated if they lose, but...
Definitely, I get the feeling it's going to be a very close shootout game, you know. I'm giving them 10 points, but somebody bet it like a couple million right off the bat. It should change the whole spread from minus 6 to minus 5, I think. So bet on the Eagles. We'll see how it goes. Till next week, we'll see who's celebrating.
All right, guys.
Who's having a parade?
All right. Okay, sounds good.
Adios.
All right, I'll see you guys later.